Let's begin.
This is the boss.
I'm the boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson. I got
that. Welcome back, hour number two, and a great Monday Night Football game underway, 7-7 with about 8 minutes remaining in the second quarter in a very important matchup with deep playoff implications, certainly seedings at stake. It'll be fun to watch this one, the Vikings and the Seahawks, 7-7.
You know, Kirk Cousins is 0-7 Monday Night Football games.
Well, he had that big win over the Cowboys on a Sunday night. Everybody said, well, he can never win at the marquee night games. He did win Sunday. Let's see if he reeled it in on Monday.
Hopefully he can blow the lid off this one.
Now, when we went to break, you said you had an answer for who should be the Cowboys coach next year.
I do. I have one for you, and I want to see what you think.
Okay.
Because, you know, all the talk, of course, is Lincoln Riley.
Yes.
Lincoln Riley, in my opinion, is not going to leave this amazing job he has at OU.
He has a good gig, and he's riding high.
He's got a good gig, and honestly, he's being paid as much, if not more, than an NFL coach. These college coaches in these, you know, ranked programs, and his has been very high profile and very successful. I mean, why would you leave that? He seems to love it. So I'm kind of taking him out of the picture. I'm assuming he's staying, and I'm assuming after Carolina's horrific meltdown at the hands of the Redskins yesterday, that it is a possibility Ron Rivera will be losing his job.
I think he very well might.
And I love Ron Rivera, and I love him as a coach, and I think he is a player's coach, and he's a no-nonsense, and he would be the perfect Dallas Cowboys head coach.
I don't know that I want it. I got to think that one over. Boy, okay. That was not a name I thought you'd come up with.
I knew this would get you a little off your game there.
I mean, we had Lincoln Riley on the docket.
Urban Meyer.
Maybe Josh McDaniel. All the usual suspects. But Riverboat Ron. Let me think about that one.
Okay, I want you to think about it because, you know, they're not playing like they are because Kyle Allen is a starting quarterback. Let's just be real.
Mm.
So people are cam bashing. Now they're going to be Kyle bashing. He's had a lot of setbacks, but I think if he's on the market, he'd be the number one coaching option for another job.
All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears to college football. What a great weekend it was. We're going to get a chance to visit with Jerry Palm, the CBS Sports expert on all things college football, and we'll ask him about college.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, SB Nation Radio. And joining us now is Jerry Palm. He is a CBS Sports guru on all things college football. Jerry, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, we are doing great, and there's so much to unpack in the world of college football. Let's start with Alabama. There were almost two narratives I heard coming out of the weekend. One is, oh, my gosh, it's the end of an era. Alabama will not dominate as they have. Saban was outcoached, and they cannot be what they've ever been. The other narrative is, well, no, look, if Tua had played, they would have been a different team. They likely would have won. They'd be in the CFP, and they'd be on their way. Are we overreacting to one loss to Auburn, a very good Auburn team?
Well, I'm not sure either of those statements is true. Alabama's still very talented. They still have one of, if not the best, recruiting classes every year. Tua being hurt obviously changes the way they play, but you can't just assume he would have been great against Auburn, who has a very good defense. I don't know, when you've thrown two pick sixes, probably not. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they win. It just means the game is different. So I think those are both overreactions. And I don't necessarily agree with either of them.
Do you think, Jerry, so the kicker has apologized, Alabama's kicker, on social media, taking blame for the loss. What's that?
That was also an overreaction.
Right.
It's not his fault.
Exactly. It's not his fault. And do you think that just came from him having the weight of that loss on him? Or do you think that was
probably
from a lot of, you know, a lot of pressure from the coaching staff? I don't know.
No, that probably just came from him. I don't think the coaches or the PR guys would have thought that was necessary and probably would have, I think, more likely tried to talk him out of it.
Sure.
That probably just came from, failing in what was otherwise a big moment. And even still, if he makes that kick, there's no guarantee they win the game. That just ties it.
Well, exactly. And the fact is that the Alabama defense gave up 48 points to Auburn. So
well,
it starts
the Alabama defense gave up 34. The Alabama offense gave up two of those touchdowns.
True. Yep.
Yeah, very true. Very true. But still, 34 for the Alabama defense
is a lot. No.
Is not normal.
Alabama conceded 94 points to the two ranked teams they played this year and 128 to the other 10.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's a good stat.
Wow.
Okay, so let's assume that LSU beats Georgia, Utah and Oklahoma take care of business, win their conferences. Which one lost team gets to be in the Final Four?
Well, I don't think it's a given that it's one or the other. Utah is the one the committee has preferred to this point. Probably be the one ranked higher tomorrow. But if Utah has a squeaker and Oklahoma runs Baylor off out of the gym, it's not a gym. I'm in basketball mode a little bit.
You're getting ready for that already, Jerry.
Run them off the field, then it could be Oklahoma because style points matter. So it's not enough to say, well, if both teams win. It matters how badly you win, especially to this committee. This committee this year has been much more prone to valuing style over substance. Oklahoma has a better resume, regardless, in terms of just strength of schedule, quality wins, all of that. Oklahoma's better. But Utah's been winning by more, and this committee seems to care about that.
Well, and it strikes me that Utah's a little more vulnerable against Oregon than Oklahoma is against Baylor, although I'm probably splitting hairs there.
Oh, I don't know. I actually like Oregon to win the game. Utah fans are killing me for it. I just think that that's a really good football team. And Utah is too. The problem is I think Oregon's better tested.
Yes.
But they also have another loss. They have another loss for a reason. They came out flat at Arizona State, got jumped on, and couldn't come back and win it. That didn't happen to Utah, or at least not more than once anyway. So, I think the Oregon's a better tested team, but Utah's really good, man. And both teams are especially good on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and that's where the game's ultimately going to get won.
If you're looking at, Jerry, the Pac-12 champ and the Big 12 champ, which conference do you think would be the better conference in the eyes of the committee?
Well, they don't care. They don't measure conferences. The Big 12 has been in the rankings more. Oregon and Utah, Oklahoma and Baylor have both been in the rankings consistently. The Big 12, I think, has had at least one other team in the rankings every week. It's only as of a couple of weeks ago that USC made an appearance,
sure,
and they're still there. No one else is going to get in. There could be two or three other Big 12 teams in the rankings this week, although Iowa State probably won't make it, but K-State and Oak State, I think, have a pretty good chance of being in. So I would say at least at the top of the league, the committee has shown a preference for the Big 12. We don't know what they think about the bottom of the league because they don't rank them.
Going back to the Big 12, how disappointing has UT been, the Longhorns, and what's the root cause of their problems?
Well,
they did fire their defensive coordinator.
How much time you got?
Yeah.
The expectations are high at Texas, maybe unreasonably high, but they're high. Tom Herman has struggled to get, everything going on all cylinders on both sides of the ball for whatever reason. I think largely it's talent. They just don't have enough depth of talent to win consistently. And, they could get a big win here or a big win there. They beat Oklahoma last year, You know, but they haven't been able to consistently win the games that a team like Texas expects to win. And I think in large part that's talent. I don't know that it's scheme so much as it's talent, but when you get rid of coordinators, you know, that's usually the first step. The first thing a head coach has to do is sort of save his job. Like, all right, well, we can get rid of you or we can get rid of them and you can try again. So, you know, they're doing the get rid of them part. And we'll see if they can bring in some new schemes. But, you know, the problem with that is you've got all these players are kind of starting over next season, having to learn something new on both sides of the ball.
Let's look at the Big Ten for a minute, Jerry. So Ohio State beats up on Michigan 56-27. What is your critique of Jim Harbaugh to lose once again to Ohio State and the way that he lost? And do you see his status changing going forward at Michigan? Will he be, continue to be the head coach?
Yeah, unless he leaves for another job. Yes, they're not going to get rid of him.
Yep.
I mean, he is averaging more than 9 wins a year.
Here's
the problem with that. He doesn't have good enough players to beat Ohio State. And really, nobody does.
Right.
They annihilated everybody but Penn State this season. Now, Michigan should have matched up better athletically than Penn State did. They certainly match up better athletically than Wisconsin does. But they're not good enough. But the players they have are good enough to win 9 or 10 games, but not good enough to beat Ohio State yet, who's just recruiting at a completely different level. And, you know, Michigan's getting there, but they're not there yet. And, you know, if you all of a sudden you dump coaches now, you're starting over. You know, they are making progress, but it's hard to tell because Ohio State is playing at a ridiculous level, especially this season.
We're talking to Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. So it is interesting you talk about the talent on Ohio State. Obviously, they got two Heisman candidates in Justin Fields and Chase Young. And my colleague here was saying that she wants D.K. Robbins to be considered as well. I mean, what a season he's had. They've got talent all over that field.
I mean, he's got to be in the Heisman conversation, do you think?
Yeah. You know, and what's funny about that is that Jonathan Taylor will probably be the first team All-Big Ten running back. Dobbins is terrific, and he destroyed Michigan, didn't he? And that's the thing. That's the thing that Michigan can't do.
Right.
They've got really good receivers. They've got a quarterback who, you know, kind of, it's gotten better at least in the second half of the season, finding those
guys.
But
not consistent.
But they can't run the ball to set it up. Their offensive line is good, isn't good enough to handle Ohio State for a full 60 minutes. They can handle them for a half, you know, maybe, but they can't handle them for a full 60. And then Michigan's defense can't get off the field because Ohio State has got pros at almost every position.
Oh, it is ridiculous.
On offense. So, that's the thing. You know, Michigan's a really talented team, but Ohio State is, you know, as close as we get in college football, like, you know, it's like in Alabama. They've got pros everywhere on Ohio State right now. And so you get beat 56-27. You know, unless Harbaugh can go out and out-recruit Ohio State, he's going to have a hard time beating them. But who's going to – but if you get rid of him, who are you bringing in?
Right.
Urban Meyer?
Well,
that would be a twist.
That would be an interesting twist.
Maybe Tom Brady upon retirement.
There's a thought.
He'd be a recruiter. Yeah. All right.
Here's the problem, though. He has to recruit something besides quarterback.
Noted. Right. Okay, so before we let you go, love to get your nod for the Heisman. And if you would, give me number one and number two choice, because I think I know who your number one is. I want to hear your second place, too.
Well, my number one would be Burrow, and number two would be Chase Young.
Yeah.
I like that, too. I've got the same.
Great picks.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think he's a terrific player. He's going to have a great NFL career. I don't know if that starts next year or not. I forget what year he is.
But, oh, yeah. In fact, I've seen a mock draft that has Burrow going number one and Chase Young going number two to the Giants. Yeah. So,
really?
Yeah, it would be Bengals getting Burrow, and that would be a heck of a 1-2 punch there.
I'm a Bears fan. I'd like to put Chase Young on the other end from Khalil Mack, and then good luck blocking the Bears.
That would be an outrageous
That might
duo.
Save Mitchell's job.
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't have to score, right? All right, Jerry Palm, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time here on SB Nation Radio.
Sure. Take care.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and I do want to encourage you to trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Okay, great to talk with Jerry Palm about all things college football, and I do feel like we're on the cusp of perhaps utter chaos.
I think so too. Because I love November.
Well, how do you get to a Final Four?
Now we're in December.
It's going to be really, really hard. Obviously, if the top teams just win out, that creates a lot of clarity because you'll have three undefeated teams at the top, elite teams in LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson. And actually, when you look at those three teams, they are all elite in their own way. They've all got marquee quarterbacks. They've got a real story to tell. They've had great seasons. They've all had some quality wins. Clemson may have had the weakest schedule, but they are the defending champs, and they've been on an incredible run for a long time, and they've got Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. You cannot dismiss Clemson, even when you stack them up against LSU and Ohio State.
And I feel like the committee is trying not to keep Clemson in the top four because they have just been – they've hardly been talked about. And, yes, they are in the weakest conference – in my opinion, in the Power Fives. But when you're in a conference like that, what can you do? I mean, that's who you're in. So what you need to do is take care of business in that conference. And I know I say this all the time, but I'm a Clemson apologist. And you look at what they've done. Their margin of victory last year when they won the national championship and beat Alabama handily, their margin of victory was 28.4, something like that, against ACC opponents, conference opponents. This year, it's over 30. So they are actually beating their opponents at a better rate, and that's with a tight, tight win, or a one-point win over UNC. So Clemson is quietly taking care of business. What more can they do? They are 12-0 in their conference with a plus 30 margin of victory. Come on, committee. Give them some love. And, I mean, they are in the top four, but you have to put them there. They're defending national champs that are undefeated. But Dabo did not like the lack of love that they're getting. And I don't like people criticizing what he said. He's 100% right.
Well, the funny thing about Dabo is, yes, as he said, he can't control the strength of the conference. It's not his job to build up the conference. It's his job to build up a great team. And in building up a great team, he's made the conference look a little weaker, right? He's going to face Virginia in his conference title game, and that will be the weakest opponent in any of the Power Five conferences. But that's not anything that he can address himself.
It's nothing that he can address, but look at this, what's so fascinating. He talked about the SEC bias in his conference. So Georgia's only loss came at the hands of ACC South Carolina.
Yep.
The Gamecocks handed Georgia Bulldogs their only loss of the season. Clemson took care of South Carolina 38-3. South Carolina did not score a touchdown. Why is there not more love? It'll be interesting to see. CFP rankings come out tomorrow night. If there is more love given to Clemson after that. This is the team that took down the Georgia Bulldogs, who everyone is loving. And after that loss, it was, oh my gosh, how can we keep Georgia in the top? Where if that was a Clemson loss, Dabo's right, they'd be sitting in the 20s in the AP poll or the CFP poll.
Well, thankfully, that's only a hypothetical. I mean, as it stands now, if the CFP is not giving Clemson a lot of deference, it doesn't really matter because Clemson's three. They're not going to fall out as long as they continue to win. Everybody
as long
has
as they
to
continue
win from
to
here.
Win. That's
and,
right.
But we're at that point where everybody has to continue to win. Maybe LSU or Ohio State, if they have a close loss in their conference championships games, could squeeze their way back in. Maybe. But remember, late losses usually are far more costly than early losses.
Sure.
And it would be tough if LSU or Ohio State were to lose. I mean, the funny thing is the way college football is constructed is, yes, we might just have one of those wild upsets, and then all chaos will break loose because it will be hard. If Georgia beats LSU, it would be hard to dismiss LSU as a one-loss team and runner-up in the SEC relative to Utah or Oklahoma if they were to win out and finish as one-loss conference champs. Those are hard decisions, yeah. And they're not easy in the sense that when you start to look at strength of schedule, LSU's strength of schedule in that case would be superior to Oklahoma's or Utah's as a one-loss team.
Yeah, definitely. There's no doubt about that.
But that will all work its way through.
An animal.
But I just really look forward to these next few weeks. I mean, the conference championship matchups will be great. It is interesting. AP has come out with its new top 10, and no big surprise after the big three. Georgia is at 4, Utah 5, Oklahoma 6. And we'll see tomorrow if the real rankings come out that way. I think Oklahoma has a case.
The real
to be,
rankings.
Well, I mean, AP's great,
CFP.
But
no,
the CFP,
no, right.
The real ones tomorrow, we'll find out. And I don't know. We'll see. The other thing that I found interesting about Jerry Palm's comments were his picks for the Heisman. And so he
Did
goes
you agree with
him? Well, at this point, how could you disagree with Joe Burrow? The season he's had, yes. And the level of competition that he's defeated certainly warrants his being the Heisman Trophy winner, I think, at this point in time.
Yeah, I think they have the strongest strength of schedule in all the top five, top 10 teams.
So I salute Joe Burrow. I would cast my vote for him to be the Heisman Trophy winner. I don't think Chase Young's going to finish number two, if for no other reason than he plays the wrong position.
Exactly.
I mean, just as good as he is.
He is deserving because he wreaks havoc and he is a difference maker.
I mean, the other knock against him is he did have to sit out two games.
Right.
And so I can't believe there have been many Heisman Trophy winners
point.
Who sat out two games. I mean, clearly it's about total productivity during the course of a year, and you miss 2 out of 10, 12 games. That's a big number, right? Percentage wise. So no, I don't think Chase Young finishes number two as great a player as he is.
What about J.K. Dobbins,
well,
Ohio State's running back? I think if you saw what he did against – well, we did. You saw what he did against Penn State.
Yep.
You saw what he did against Michigan. Those are big games, big stages. He's responsible for a lot of production on Ohio State's very complete team. He's got to be in the Heisman conversation at the top of the list.
Well, in their win over Michigan, Justin Fields was good. He was 14 for 25 with 300 yards. But Dobbins was the star. He ran the ball 31 times for 211 yards and 4 TDs. Yeah, but do you look at those three from Ohio State, Justin Fields, Dobbins, and Chase Young, and worry that the vote's going to get split amongst them somehow?
I don't. And I think your point of Chase Young missing two games, I think that really does take him legitimately out of that conversation. And Justin Fields has been great, but he has not been Joe Burrow because he doesn't need to be. He's got so many weapons around him. So I don't know. Fascinating. And to me, Justin Herbert, Oregon's quarterback, after that Arizona State game, I think he's down there in the conversation. I think that really knocked him down some notches. He was tough. He could not pick up his team.
All right, last point before we have to go to break. Jerry Palm was talking about the Longhorns and how disappointed they've been. I mean, always the big expectations, and then really a very disappointing season. Now, they've fired their defensive coordinator, and they've reassigned their offensive coordinator. So the top two coordinator positions will look different next year. And there was a report from Anwar Richardson of Orange Bloods that Texas is targeting two guys to be the new offensive coordinator. One would be Graham Harrell. The other...
Oh, wow, really?
Yes, they might want to target him. The other is a guy who's going to be hot for everybody's LSU passing game coordinator, Joe Brady, who, of course, has been instrumental.
Sure, came from the Saints. He transformed Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow, that LSU offense. Joe Brady's going to get a lot of opportunity. Right now, I guess his title at LSU is passing game coordinator. So the Longhorns could come in and give him the OC opportunity, which might be a big opportunity for him. I fear for LSU that they're not going to get to hold on to Joe Brady. There's going to be a higher level job somewhere that he's going to go and grab.
Well, I don't know. After this season, maybe they will find a higher level job for him. They should do everything to hang on to that guy. He has been transformational for the LSU Tigers.
All right, when we come back, we're going to have our famous segment. It is, What Does the Boss Say? We'll listen to what others have said during the week, and we'll offer our own responses. Next up on SB Nation Radio.
And physical blood. probes and the seal goes ow, ow, ow. But there's one sound that no one knows. What does the fox say?
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, all. As the song says, this is a segment called What Does the Boss Say? And thankfully, I will not be the only one offering opinions, but...
Oh, I think it should be. It did not say What Does the Gloss Say? Let's be clear.
Let me loose, huh?
Well, I'm letting you loose. Have at it.
Well, we will take a look at what others have said over the course of the weekend and offer our own perspectives. And let's begin with the Texans and their great win Sunday night over the Patriots. Deshaun Watson was pretty effusive, pretty excited after that win. He explained how sweet it was to finally beat his hero.
I mean, honestly, it's pretty big, really just because it's Brady. You know, I was 0-2 against Brady. Who knows when he's going to hang it up? You know, that's my role model, a guy that's been doing it forever, over 20 years. I'm only alive for 20 years, so it's pretty awesome to finally get one and just to see the love and respect we have for each other. And it was big, so it was awesome.
Well, and for last night at least, Deshaun Watson outperformed Tom Brady. He threw the ball all over the field, threw it short, threw it deep. His ability to move in the pocket, if you were just starting a team based on last night's game, you'd go with Watson.
Oh, you would. But you know what nice reverence he gave to Tom Brady? He said, wow, I was 0-2 against him. I don't know how long my chances are going to last, meaning how long will Brady stay in the NFL? And it was really key to beat my childhood idol. I mean, this is it.
And equally big for Bill O'Brien to finally beat Bill Belichick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great win for the Texans last night.
Huge win for the Texans.
They are in the mix of it all. All right, let's stay with that game. Coach Bill O'Brien explained, well, there was a trick play there, right, where Hopkins pitched the ball off to Watson, who scored. Coach Bill O'Brien will explain where that trick play came from.
I think they drew that one up in the dirt over the bye week, and they brought it in, and they had it on a piece of notebook paper, and they handed it to me. You know, we've been working on that for a while, and, you know, it was all about the timing, you know, where we could get the ball so we could run a play like that. And, you know, the timing was right. We got the ball down there in the 6-yard line, and that was where we wanted to do it, and we did it, and they executed pretty well. It wasn't the exact look we thought we were going to get, and they made it work.
They did make it work. It's all about execution.
Yeah, they made it work. And frankly, for a trick play, what you're, of course, hoping is you fool the defense and you've got them way out of position. But in this case, the Patriots stayed at home. They were there. But Hopkins took the ball up into the heart of the defense and then pitched it out at the last minute. They executed it very, very well. Watson with the touchdown.
And the Patriots defense was tough. I mean, Hopkins got hit hard. Watson got hit hard. I would love to see how many quarterbacks in NFL history have passing TDs and a receiving TD in the same game.
Well, that's right. There aren't many. I mean, and the Philly special has come back into football and
right.
Certainly enables some scores for these receivers. Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts last week ran for a touchdown, passed for a touchdown, and caught a touchdown on behalf of the Sooners because of the Philly special play. So it's certainly enabling these quarterbacks to catch. We do remember Tom Brady's not a great receiver. There was the one play when he was out there and couldn't quite get his body around and make a play.
Oh, yeah, that was not a good visual. Not if you're a Pats fan.
All right, let's stay in the AFC South. Doug Marrone made a big change yesterday. He switched to Gardner Minshew in the middle of the game, and then today he's come out and said that he's going to stick with Gardner Minshew for the rest of the season. Let's hear why he switched to Minshew yesterday.
And before you know it, it's kind of, you know, it's 22-0. And, you know, so we go in there, we play the first half, and just to tell you, so I just wanted to get, you know, a spark and, you know, it was kind of dead and wanted to get things going, and I made the switch at quarterback. I told Nick coming in, you know, as soon as I got in there at halftime, I spoke to him, and, you know, we got everything ready for Gardner.
Well, they needed Gardner yesterday. I mean, Foles was off to a horrible start. 3 turnovers on the first 3 drives, and yes, they found themselves in a big hole. But the bigger narrative is the rest of the season. I mean, today Marrone has come out and said, no, we're going to go with the mustache. We're going to stick with Minshew. We're going to look to him as the answer. And frankly, they need to decide if Minshew can be a future franchise quarterback for them. Obviously, if he is, he's a lot cheaper alternative than Nick Foles right now.
Well, they've already committed big fat money to Nick Foles, and yet that's actually not on Marone. That's on Tom Coughlin.
Well, Coughlin has sort of shown some indications he's not happy with Doug Marone either. I mean, I think from Coughlin's perspective is, I had a team that I built and I crafted, and now Jalen Ramsey's gone, and Foles hasn't delivered and performed. I think Marone's on the hot seat in Jacksonville.
And I would say, but Tom, we're still paying Blake Bortles $54 million. That was your decision.
Right.
So, you know, the blame game's wonderful. But, yeah, Jacksonville's struggling. They shouldn't have to be, and they are.
All right. A great matchup yesterday was that Ravens-49ers game. Some call it the pseudo-Super Bowl matchup. And it was Justin Tucker who hit the game-winning field goal, a 49-yarder in the rain. And after the game, Tucker channeled his inner Mark Ingram.
I feel like in the spirit of my teammates who have been up here to talk to you guys the last few weeks, I should say something like real inspiring, like a big truss. And I'll open it up for questions.
Well, so Mark Ingram is a guy who has fun at those post-game press conferences. And why shouldn't they have fun? They've won 8 straight games. Wow. And when you're winning, everything is fun. And so Justin Tucker, I mean, poor guy, he doesn't get that limelight every week. But he deserved every bit of attention he got for the 49-yarder and had a lot of fun poking at his fellow teammate Mark Ingram. Life is good for the Ravens right now.
Good for them.
All right, let's go to the next one. This is the Browns. And oh my, they cannot get out of their own way. You know, earlier I wanted to bring it up, but we ran out of time. I thought yesterday's matchup between the Steelers and the Browns was the opposite end of the spectrum in coaching. Mike Tomlin, great excellence. Freddie Kitchens, oh dear. I mean, goodness. So Freddie Kitchens.
And this is a rematch of Fight Night from a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so there is the rematch of Fight Night. And, of course, Myles Garrett suspended for the rest of the year. A big setback for the Cleveland Browns and their defense. And yet somehow, some way, for some reason, Freddie Kitchens during the week was wearing a Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt, claiming that Pittsburgh started the fight. And here's Freddie Kitchens' explanation for why he was wearing a Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt right before the matchup but with the Steelers.
I mean, listen, the t-shirt didn't have anything to do with us at the minus one moving out. I wore a t-shirt. I wore a jacket with it. My daughters wanted me to wear the shirt, and I'd wear it again. I put a jacket on. I covered it up. I took a picture with a fan. That was as simple as that, you know. T-shirt didn't cause us to give up 40-yard passes, and we were ready to play. That's the only thing people need to be concerned about. We were ready to play.
See, the thing that drives me crazy about that is this is a coach who didn't really have control of his locker room. Myles Garrett, his behavior on the field was outlandish, and it's really cost the team. He's suspended for the rest of the season. Your best defensive player. It's bad news.
Your number one draft pick.
And the head coach is almost making light of it, shrugging his shoulders. Well, Pittsburgh started it. First of all, Pittsburgh didn't start it. There's no accountability there. And second, this is behavior you cannot tolerate on your team. It's a lack of discipline. And we have a team in the Browns who are the most penalized team in forever. And they're the most penalized team in the league this season.
Yes, they are.
And yet he's shrugging his shoulders and wearing a t-shirt around, making fun of it. It's bad look all the way around. Freddie Kitchens should not be a head coach in the NFL.
No, my gosh. And my first thought, this was the first I had heard of it, it was today, is if I'm John Dorsey, GM of Cleveland, and I have had all these number one draft picks, and I look at my roster with, you know, OBJ, Jarvis Landry, Chubb, you know, Myles Garrett, if he comes back, Baker Mayfield, and what is being talked about at a press conference? My head coach's doofus t-shirt? Like, they spent a really long amount of time on a dumb t-shirt. They should be talking about how to get these Browns, the talent on this roster, to actually be productive and win some games. This is insanity. Oh, my God. I'm shocked.
Well, we have our list. We didn't get to it of coaches most likely to be fired or maybe most should be fired. And I think Freddie Kitchens is probably at the top of the list. I mean, there are other choice names as well. He's not alone. Jason Garrett is certainly on the chopping block. Pat Shurmur perhaps as well. But Freddie Kitchens, if John Dorsey returned him as head coach. John Dorsey's got to look in the mirror.
It's on John Dorsey.
Yeah, but that he was on John Dorsey to pick him in the first place.
Absolutely.
But
you
here
know
we
what
sit.
They say, you can't stand the heat. Get out of the kitchens.
Nice pun. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, let's go to the next one. There's still a snicker going on here about that one. All right. Let's go to Michigan, where Jim Harbaugh once again fell short to Ohio State. And Harbaugh was a little testy. He was in no mood to talk after that game. Let's hear what Harbaugh had to say.
Is this a talent gap? Is it a preparation gap? Is it a coaching gap? What is the biggest difference between you and Ohio State at this point?
I mean, I'll answer your questions, not your insults. So
that wasn't an insult. I mean, you've given 118 points in 2 years.
They played really good. They played good.
100 yards. That's what I'm asking. What's the biggest difference in the gap between you guys?
They played better today.
Well, well, well.
There's clearly frustration there. I mean, this is the one thing Harbaugh has not been able to do is beat Ohio State. And I think it's a fair question, though, to say,
Very fair question.
It a talent gap? Is it a coaching gap? What is it that needs to happen to close the gap? And Harbaugh wasn't going to go there. But to frame it as, I'll answer questions but not insults, isn't really fair to the reporter in my mind.
No, I agree. That's a salty guy who cannot win a big game.
All right, now we're going to go to a guy who has won many big games. And, well, he's a coach you love.
I love Dabo.
Dabo Sweeney. He has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't think that really the world looks at Clemson the way that it should. He thinks that they are often criticizing his strengths of schedule. And he let it loose. Let's hear what Dabo Sweeney had to say after his win this weekend.
How important is this game?
Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, it's huge from a national standpoint because obviously if we lose this game, I mean, they're going to kick us out. They don't want us in there anyway. we'd drop to 20, you know. I mean, Georgia loses to this very same team, and the very next day it's how do we keep Georgia in it? We win to the team that beat South Carolina. And it's how do we get Clemson out? It's the dadgum mistake. So it's big.
I mean, he has a good point.
He's spot on.
He's done everything he can to get Clemson where it needs to be. Interestingly, when we were looking at various candidates for the Heisman Trophy, one narrative is that Deshaun Watson could explain to Trevor Lawrence what it's like to lose the Heisman in September. Because remember, Deshaun really didn't get a lot of love for the Heisman the stretch because he didn't start with stellar numbers way back in September. Same with Trevor Lawrence this year. But since October 1st, Lawrence is completing 74% of his throws with 25 touchdowns and just 3 turnovers. 25 touchdowns and 3 turnovers. And his passer rating is basically the same as Burrow's. So Lawrence deserves some mention. Clemson certainly deserves it. Clemson will be in the CFP. They'll be fine. It will all be settled on the field. But yes, Clemson, because of where they're coming, because they're going to beat Virginia in the conference championship game, certainly is looked at a little differently than the others.
You know, it is, but they didn't from the get-go as a defending national champ that not only was a national champion, but it was at the hands of, they took down Alabama handily from the get-go, from the first series of drives, Alabama, the king of football. So to come back as the defending national champ but not get that love, that's tough. If it was Alabama that had taken down Clemson, you bet Alabama is getting all the love. So I think that it is tough. It is tough for Clemson, but I like how they're handling it. Be angry about it. It's okay. And take that anger out on the field. And you don't want to peak in September. I mean, if I had to say, I mean, of course, I wish Trevor Lawrence had just like a seamless season. But, hey, he got his bumps out early, and I like where Clemson is going. And don't forget, they lost 5 of their front 7 on the defensive line to the NFL, and they have not dropped off on the defensive end at all.
No, the defense has been stout. All right, when we come back, we'll take a look at what we've learned from the gloss over the last couple of hours. Next up on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, my favorite time of the show, I get to tell everybody what I learned from the Gloss over the last couple of hours. First of all, she thinks J.K. Dobbins should be in the consideration set for the Heisman Trophy.
I do. Top three.
You think Clemson needs more love from the CFP?
I do, and I've thought it since the beginning.
You think when we have a weekend where Alabama and the Patriots lose, and everybody wants to write stories about Alabama and the Patriots losing, more recognition needs to go to Auburn and the Texans, who were the conquerors, and most notably, Bo Nix, who played really well for Auburn, and Deshaun Watson for the Texans.
Show the love to the winners, yes.
You think John Dorsey, of the Cleveland Browns, needs to get rid of this kitchens problem very quickly.
They don't need a kitchens in that house.
Okay. You think that Ron Rivera, if he's cut loose from the Panthers, just might be the fit for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys.
I do, and I loved watching your face when I suggested it. You were surprised.
And you think there's a possibility the Patriots will swallow hard and re-sign Antonio Brown.
I think they're going to go for it.
Necessity would drive them to it, you say.
We'll see if the Shield allows it. They're going to try, I guarantee you.
All right, coming up next, the great Alex Gold. He's the gold standard. He's a Chiefs fan, and his Chiefs defeated your Raiders, Carla. So you may not look...
Stop the reminder.
Don't look kindly at him when he comes in. Alex Gold, gold standard, next.